Hello and welcome to the Amateur Skeptics podcast number 143. I'm your host, Brian. Joining me this evening, Mac.
Good evening.
And sitting there in the same room as him, must be smelly, Ian.
Yes, so that means I'm wearing all my clothes today.
And of course, we have...
all of Ian's clothes.
Are you wearing each other's clothes?
We won't tell.
Okay, and of course, the dumbass himself.
Hey, what happened? I was under the impression that there was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom.
Yes. Yes, the world has ended.
Oh, okay. I missed it.
Can't you tell?
I slept through it.
You slept through it? Yeah, we all did. How was everybody doing this evening?
Not too bad.
Doing pretty good. Having a fun weekend at Mile Icon.
Good. Excellent.
Saw Crimson Peak this weekend.
Crimson Peak, okay.
Gothic ghost story.
I installed and configured Cactus.
Installed and configured what?
Cactus.
Well, we won't have to water it much.
It's a network monitoring solution.
Ah, okay.
And I didn't dig into why it's called Cactus, but it works. All right. Well, anything else? Mile High Con was good?
Yeah. Brian and Doctor were there, but the one seminar of those I was able to peek in at, it was stuff I'd already seen them do a few times.
Okay.
So I didn't stay around for that. Although I did talk with Brian for a bit, and he was talking, they had just done a seance.
Oh.
And apparently at the seance, they actually convinced a woman she was possessed.
Wow.
They're like, well, yeah.
That's not a good thing, actually.
No. That sounds about right for them, though.
Yeah, it does sound, you know, they like to ride on that edge of getting sued.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that if you're going to convince somebody they're possessed, they're probably half convinced anyway.
True.
It could be. It could be.
The devil makes me do a lot of things.
Yeah, like this podcast.
Yes.
The devil made me do it. All right, well, then if nothing else, it's time to masturbate with the masturbation moment.
The Amateur Skeptics present Ian's Masturbation Moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire. The Dumbass Media Empire, bringing you content that touches people while they touch themselves.
Yay.
Take off your pants?
That's right. Here, while you're looking for that.
See, that doesn't sound like it at all.
No?
You gotta actually hit your skin, you know.
Oh, that's good.
Oh! This podcast, I found an interesting article, but since Brian's been giving me hell about trying to get more variety in there. So I found this article that was titled, These People Gave Up Masturbating for a Month and Almost Lost It.
It's related to masturbation.
Oh, wow. Okay, good. Let's hear about it. What happened?
So basically, it was an experiment. A bunch of people I got involved and said, okay, we won't masturbate for a month, and then we'll come and talk about it.
Well, Seinfeld already tried that.
That's right, master of your domain.
And so if you scroll through the little GIFs they have, the comments they've been making about stuff, one of the hurdles, this woman's talking about how the worst part was going to see Magic Mike.
Yes. Yeah, she said that she also said right from the beginning that she masturbates every day, absolutely. And they showed her even on the first day, she's like, this drawer is where all my vibrators are, and she said that the hardest part was when she went to go see Magic Mike with friends.
Now, see, that's the kind of thing that you might want to avoid doing if you're giving up masturbation for a month.
Yeah, but I think part of the whole experiment is you should do what you would normally do, yeah. Right? I mean, if you're avoiding all sorts of stimuli that would make you want to masturbate, which could be, I mean, for me, you know, in a hotel alone going to sleep, that's enough. Right?
Yeah.
So I don't know how I avoid that. Can you tell me?
What going to sleep?
Coffee.
Not baseball?
Coffee. I'll hire a prostitute so I don't have to go to bed alone.
Before you go to bed, punch yourself in the nut several times.
You know,
just get really drunk.
If you are used to that release of endorphins on a daily basis and you suddenly cut yourself off, you're gonna tend to throw your hormones out of balance.
I think so.
Are you saying that masturbation is like a drug?
I'm saying
everything's
like oxygen.
Like a drug.
I'm saying it's like oxygen.
Have we not figured that out already? We pretty much have determined everything in the world is a drug, and it'll screw you up just as bad as crack.
Well, you know, that's a thing that I think
human blood.
Reading some articles, I think some people don't get about the pleasure centers of the brain, because they do these brain scans and relate certain things to drugs, like, you know, good food or whatever, because they reward the pleasure centers of the brain just like drugs. But it's kind of the other way around. Drugs are imitating the natural way that your pleasure centers of your brain get stimulated all the time by pleasurable things.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, but like we've looked at addiction, and we realize that it's as much social or more, probably even more than it is about the drug itself, right? And here we go. We're talking about social activities. We're talking about, your day-to-day stuff, what you do. And if masturbation is part of that, cutting that out is, of course, going to be tough. But I have a solution. There is a way for somebody to go 30 days without masturbating and not have a problem.
Okay.
You know, I once did it for like 12, 13 years.
Okay. I was going to say,
you're 30 days without masturbating for 12 or 13 years?
Have sex with a partner.
For the first 12, 13 years of my life.
Well, yeah, sure. No, I have sex with a partner. Find a partner and just take all that energy you put towards masturbating and just have sex with that partner. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that
Wait.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're saying that, that's a lot of effort to go to. You know, reach down and...
You know what, though? That's not an unreasonable response. If you think about it, because it is more effort when you've got a person. Man, masturbating is, I mean, it's a quick thing that you can do, and it's pleasurable, and
you don't need to convince someone else to join you.
Exactly. You're right. It is more effort to convince somebody to join you.
Yeah. And I'm told then that you have to worry about their pleasure, and
right.
Who wants to do that?
Well, no. No, you don't have to worry about it, and we have an article that covers that later.
Okay.
But back to the actual article, they talk about, you know, the irritability and a few other things like that, more stress. One of them went to eating a lot more. You know, so there were, you know, some noticeable changes for them as they did this. And our one woman claims that it was the hardest thing she's ever done.
Yep.
So, you know, I can understand some of that.
Yeah, it's interesting, though. If you Google effects of not masturbating, Google goes, we're including the effects of masturbating. It's like, well, wait a second. I only want to know the effects of not masturbating, but Google doesn't care. Oh, I'm sorry. I googled benefits of masturbating, and it included benefits of not masturbating is what it was. So even Google's biased.
Well, Google is going to be driven by what people search. And what people search is what's going to come up popular. So if you've got an equal number of people or a nearly equal number of people requesting both searches, it's going to suggest that search for you.
Right. But isn't that interesting that so many people I bet you more people are searching the benefits of not masturbating the benefits of not masturbating as opposed to the benefits of masturbating.
Well, that's true, Brian. And the reason for that is because the people who are not looking up the benefits of not masturbating are searching porn on Google.
That's true. They're not worried about it. But it is interesting that we have a cultural bias against masturbation.
It's sad that we have a cultural bias.
We've talked about that in the past.
Yeah. Well, in fact, last podcast.
Seems like a very common topic for us to bring up.
Well, we do tend to circle back to it often. All right. So there we go. So but for these people, it was definitely difficult for them to stop masturbating. And while it's just an anecdote, I agree with them. It's difficult.
I like the post from the guy who said that he wasn't going to bother doing it because he didn't need to know that about him.
Yes. Yes. I did see that. That was, some of the comments on there were good. That's right.
I've heard that self-control is a muscle, and the more you exercise it, the more like you can exercise self-control in other domains. But I don't know. This seems kind of needless self-control to me.
I agree with that. All right. The world ended, and nobody noticed.
Yes. An online Christian group is insisting that the now-deceased preacher Harold Camping was right and that his prophecies forecast the end of the world on October 7th. Well, what's the date today?
October 26th.
28th. Oh, 26th?
No, it's wait. 26th.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yes. So.
Well, okay, okay. They could still be right. I've heard that there's a theory out there that we're actually living in like the 1700s or something. We lost 300 years in history.
Ah, okay.
So that might be it. If not, they're just full of it. And how can that be possible?
You know, it's weird because Harold Camping was using this bastardized form of numerology to make his predictions. And he made his predictions twice and was wrong both times.
Yeah.
So be
well. Now the online group is saying that he was actually right, but that it was an important date, but not the end date. That was October 7th.
Right.
He was actually correct that the end times were coming, at least on a personal level.
Well, okay. So it is odd that every single doomsday prediction was wrong, but the I will grant them that it only takes
Wait,
one.
Have you done the research into every single doomsday prediction? I'm not going to accept that statement unless you've looked at all the doomsday predictions and verified that they were wrong.
Can I just say I think, therefore I am, and to conclude that the end has not happened?
Yeah,
I'm going to have to check the math on that.
I'm going to counter that with all matter is merely energy condensed to a slow vibration. Life is nothing but a dream, and don't take things too seriously.
Merrily, 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 merrily.
But we've had two.
Actually, there is one doomsday prediction we do not know for certain about. Well, there's rumors that doomsday is going to show up in Batman versus Superman. That is a doomsday prediction.
Okay. Well, while that may be true, it is a little bit different than this doomsday prediction.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah, but we also had the blood moon earlier, you know, yeah. It talks about the Mayan apocalypse. Yeah. I mean, over and over and over. It just seems to me that you gotta wonder why they keep doing it.
Cause, you know, Cthulhu tells them to.
Right. But here's the odd thing is, right? Because the only reason to do this, as far as I can see, is to get people to come to Christianity, you know, to in case it happens, right? This is fire protection. It's fire protection. It's
Pascal's wager.
Exactly. There you go.
Well, it is kind of exciting to think that we might be living in the end times. Like that. That's something. Like if the world starts to, you know, blow up all of a sudden, it would be briefly exciting. Anyway.
By the way, I don't know if I told you guys this or not, but. I happened to post on a post on Facebook that had a large number of Christian people posting on it. And I just, you know, I basically said that I believe there is a supreme being, but we've agreed to keep his son out of our relationship. Oh, you should have heard it. And then somebody used Pascal's wager as a reason for me to believe. And I'm like, seriously? You serious about that?
Yeah.
So often when when the end fails to come, doomsday believers blame themselves, experts say. Sometimes they blame the faulty math.
Yeah, that's been the general pattern. I messed up on the math somewhere. I didn't completely understand it.
That is the gospel of the neo-campingites.
Right, but here's the thing is that the Bible doesn't give a date, right? So what you're looking for, well, unless you're using some sort of bastardized numerology like they are. But generally, you know, they say that you'll know it's coming by these signs, right? The Antichrist will be, you know, the Antichrist will show up and yada, yada, yada. And so what is always happening is
depending upon who you listen to, that's either right. Obama or Donald Trump.
Exactly, right? It depends on who you ask. But a lot of doomsday predictors, you know, have cited, Obama as the Antichrist. It's like, what the fuck has he really done that makes you conclude that he's the Antichrist? Because a black man is president?
Because a black liberal man is president.
Ah, there we go. I mean, it's just baffling, isn't it?
You know, I'm absolutely astonished at the liberal candidates, the Democratic candidates seem to be sticking to the facts, and the Republican candidates and their supporters seem to really have nothing to fall back on except insult. But the good news is that they're starting to go after Bernie Sanders, too, which apparently means that he's considered to be a threat, too.
I mean, but yeah, just, I mean, the Westboro Baptists, I think that even they have said that Obama's the Antichrist. The guy with the lattes, the semen of the lattes, he's called Obama the Antichrist.
Oh, yeah. Terry knows who he is.
Manning, Pastor Manning has called, yeah. So.
And you know, his brother is such a good quarterback.
Right, but which brother?
Peyton.
No, bullshit.
Well, like
he's washed up.
I heard something about that myself. Don't pay too much attention to the whole football thing.
Eli, that's your Manning.
All yes? Right. I didn't know I had a Manning.
Yeah, well, you do now.
Oh, okay. Does Eli know this?
I don't know.
I think he's worth quite a bit, so actually I wouldn't mind if he was my Manning. I'd probably, do fairly well.
I'm sure if you email him, he'll get right back to you.
Okay.
Anyway, so doomsday predictions, they come, they go, they fail, we go on. Yep. Right?
Well, in the immortal words of Nick Fury, until the world stops, I shall behave as if it intends to spin on.
That's definitely not a bad philosophy.
Yep.
All right. Okay. So this is difficult with all the background noise. I'm having a really hard time concentrating. It sounds absolutely awful.
So you want to bring Tango and Cappy out here?
It wouldn't matter.
I think you'd be wrong. So basically we're looking at GPS doomsday here, huh?
GPS?
Recalculating.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yes. Fighting an alternative route to the end of the earth.
You got a good one in there.
Yes, thank you. Christian websites don't look at your wife's face during sex to enjoy it even when she resists. Did you know that it is the woman's job to have sex and that you should be having sex with your wife even if she's not interested, just to maintain? You know, just to make sure that you're having sex and she doesn't need to be interested. But when she's not interested, it's important to not look at her face and look at her body so that you enjoy the experience.
It doesn't matter if either of you are interested.
I don't know. But the point here is that make sure that her disinterest doesn't ruin it for you.
Yep. Treat your wife like a blow up doll. Absolutely.
Yeah, I always found it better when my partner was enjoying it as much as me. When she wasn't, it didn't feel right.
I don't get that, because the big thing that turns me on when I'm with a woman is the woman being turned on.
Right.
I mean, if the woman's not turned on, then I might as well be doing a blow-up doll. Yeah. I mean, what's the point of...
the point of a man and a woman being together is to drive each other to... distraction.
You guys are missing the point here. Solomon says that a man should think of an unwilling wife like Medusa, the mythic god.
How many wives did Solomon have?
I don't know.
I know he had quite a few. So
with 1,000 wives, you know, do you think he could have skipped on a few until he found a willing one?
But here's the thing: is that if she's not enjoying it, don't look her in the face. Look at her body so she doesn't turn you to stone. But part of me turns to stone when I'm having sex. So I find this might be counterintuitive.
You know, I the article.
Oh yeah, don't look at her face unless tears of anger turn you on. Then go ahead and look at her face. But
I know you love your wife. Most men do. But sin is ugly, the writer remarks. Your beautiful bride's face becomes ugly during sinful times that she is grudgingly giving you sex as she grimaces, waiting for you to just hurry up and get it over with.
Let me make a little correction here. We were talking about Solomon. I don't think that the person who wrote the article was actually the biblical Solomon.
No, I don't think so either. His name is Solomon. They're quoting.
Doesn't have 1,000 wives.
No. Yeah, I think you're right.
But this guy has pretty much said there's no such thing as rape. There is rape if there's a no.
Yeah, but he is also one of the proponents that if you're married, you can't rape your wife.
Yeah. So is he also saying that, because like this is like a really old-fashioned idea, but that women don't get pleasure from sex?
No, that's not. He's not saying that, but he's saying that it is sinful when a woman doesn't.
It sounded to me kind of like he was saying that since it's sinful, then obviously women won't enjoy it. So.
He's saying it's not important whether or not they get off on it.
Yeah, but that's, he's also saying that if she doesn't want it, it's sinful.
That's what he's saying.
If she doesn't want it, she is being sinful because she's not.
Oh, okay, I get it.
Whether or not she enjoys it doesn't matter.
And that's why she'd be sad, because she's being sinful.
Right.
Yeah, she's asking for her husband as he says, "Hey, baby, let's get to going."
And she knows she's being sinful, so she's feeling all sorts of guilty.
I think that's the point.
Yeah. Okay.
Basically, your wife is your sex toy. That's what he's saying.
I think he's right. Your wife is your sex toy. I'm trying to say, oh, okay, I got the finger.
I would say that he's probably not much of an economist then, because I would tell you that the average price of a blow-up doll versus a marriage certificate and a, you know, the maintenance of a wife.
Yeah, women are expensive.
It's not a good bargain, I'm just saying.
Even if you buy the latex even if you buy the fancy latex one, you know, they're only $5,000. That's way cheaper than a wife.
Now, Japanese sex robot, on the other hand, that might be...
Okay.
All right. Well, I mean, it's been a long time since you've done a robot story. Do you have one?
Japanese sex robot? No.
Okay. All right. Just checking.
Do you think this counts?
Bit small.
All right. So we've concluded I do not have a Japanese sex robot.
Did you go looking, Ian?
I'm in his office. He has Transformers everywhere, and he found his RC, a female Autobot.
Let me ask you, do you feel...
Now you can't stop looking.
Ian, do you feel safe? Have you taken the proper precautions?
I think Baxter can behave himself.
Okay, all right. Just checking.
You are so red, man. All right.
Okay, so a woman, or I'm sorry, a family has... they stunted the growth of their daughter to expand her life, or to expand her world? What's the deal here?
Basically, the deal is that she is severely disabled. There's like, she doesn't have pretty much any muscular control, even to the point of they don't even know if her facial expressions are actually controlled or if they're just muscle contractions.
So, she's a step away from brain dead, is what it kind of sounds like.
Well, I don't think she's a step away from brain dead, but she doesn't really communicate well with the world, so they don't know what's going on with her. But their concern was that they wanted to be able to make sure that they were still able to lift her and take her places. And so they made steps. They started in Korea, because the New Zealand doctors wouldn't do it, but they would maintain it if somebody else would start it.
Okay.
So they started in Korea and started her on hormones, essentially to stop her from growing.
I think that they were inducing puberty.
Right. No, actually, they were stopping puberty, is what it sounded like.
They also treated her to a hysterectomy.
Right, yeah. Because they induced puberty and she started to bleed.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, I understand the reasons for them doing this, and you know, but I can also see the slippery slope.
Yeah, but in this case, I think it makes sense. I mean, to just do it would be one thing, but
what about putting your child on hormone therapy to make your child bigger and therefore more likely to get into fight?
Yeah, actually, I have no problem with that either.
But really? They did with
it, hey, listen, you know, it's not going to diminish her quality of life at all. If we make it so that it's easier for us to help her and give her a better quality of life, if anything. I mean, if they can move her around easier, take her places more often, give her more because she's more mobile, it's actually going to be beneficial to her rather than her being more trapped in a wheelchair, more trapped being lugged around.
Yeah. Or maybe even possibly more trapped in the house.
Yeah, and more trapped, more limited to stairs. I mean, if they can't help her upstairs, it becomes more dangerous.
Exactly.
So, you know, there's a certain level that this actually probably helped her quality of life.
But on the other hand, like I said, I can see the slippery slope.
Yes.
But to go back to something that Ian had just said, he wouldn't have a problem with the idea of giving your child hormone treatments to to make them bigger and to get an athletic scholarship.
I don't actually. One, it's not going to do anything. Also, I think the whole steroid thing is rather silly. You know, why do we care if they use steroids or not?
Okay, I'm going to say because the idea is in those particular cases that when we're looking at athletes, they're supposed to be peak human.
But they work. They do stuff to make them more peak. They have to exercise and train and do physical stuff. Anyway, that is a minor version of that. Hormones is a bit major. But to me, you know, if you're fixing your body up to do something, it's up to you to do it. I couldn't care less. If that's what you want to try for, do hormones. Do whatever the hell you feel like. If that's your goal.
Right, but here's the problem. We have a rule against it, right? And
yeah.
So if we have a rule against it, they shouldn't be doing it.
Just because there's a rule against it doesn't mean I have to agree with the rule.
Well, but here's the thing is that they made those rules. It's not like the government has come in and said that this must be peak humans without alteration, right? That's what they decided amongst themselves when they started the leagues.
But once more, it doesn't mean I have to agree with it. The leagues can have whatever rules they want and follow them.
Exactly, and they do have them.
There is a certain sense in which I think there's a certain argument you can make that, well, we want to see what the utmost that we can make out of the human condition, you know, with you know, drugs or whatever we want to do to augment people in order to make them, like, really good physical specimens. And that is something really interesting to watch in a sports setting for a lot of people. Not for me personally. I don't care that much about sports. But,
You know, the thing about hills, though, guys, is that they've got two slippery slopes. What about the slippery slope side that says, okay, they've made their daughter smaller to better able to care for her. What about the family who wants to keep their daughter smaller because she's cuter that way?
Yeah, that's a problem.
That's a bit more, yeah. But there's some girl that'd probably go for it for, like, beauty pageants and such.
I have a problem with this idea of altering people's, giving them steroids to make them more enhanced. As children, right? As an adult, we can have that conversation.
Yeah. Although, actually, at Mile High Con, I was talking with this one lady who was talking about how she was into ballet dancing. Then puberty hit. Certain developments made her unbalanced for ballet dancing then, and she was actually kind of disappointed that she could no longer, you know, pursue ballet dance.
I'm aware that happens.
So,
we're talking about the arrival of the boob fairy?
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
The boob fairy.
I mean, in that case, as a teenager, she really had a passion of becoming a dancer. Would it have been a bad thing for her to go surgery to stop her breast from developing?
Well, was she, who was making the decision, the child or the parents?
I think it would have been her from the sounds of it.
Yeah, I don't know. That
she didn't go into this debate, but she was talking about how she was disappointed that she had to give up dancing.
The daughter in the article, there's no way she can give informed consent.
Right.
No way they can even interpret it if she is giving consent.
Yeah, but in that case, the parents have to manage her for the rest of her life, whatever that may be.
Yep.
And that's one of the reasons why I have no problem with what they did.
I don't have a problem with what they did, but I do have a problem with the idea of giving your young child steroids so that they can be a better athlete.
Right. Well, there's, you know, a lot of messed up stuff that I'm not necessarily, you know, saying that, give let the parents have complete control and screw their kids up like that and force them into...
In this particular case, it seemed to have some positive effects.
Yeah.
That she was having some muscle contractions that subsided with the steroid or with the hormones. It kept her smaller so that they could manage her. And I think that is definitely an issue as this child becomes an adult, how do you manage them when they can't manage themselves? That is a legitimate question that needs to be answered. But then the idea of altering somebody's physical characteristics so they can be a ballet dancer longer, so they can be a better athlete. I think now we're getting into a different area.
It's really no different than a teenage girl having facial surgery or breast implants so that she is prettier and is more popular and more likely to get the career that she's looking for. And in the case of something like that, you're doing harm to a developing body.
That, well, yeah, exactly. I agree with
it's
that.
Just, you know, it's I keep saying slippery slope, but there's so many ways that something like this could be used well, and there's so many ways it could be used really bad.
Right. And there's
really no way to put any kind of laws or anything in place that would stop the things that we don't want happening and keep the things that we do want happening.
Right. Well, that's one problem with anything like that. And, you know, morals in general with science. How far do we go with science? Well, if people could control themselves, we could go to a certain extreme. But the problem is, you know, people don't. People do stupid stuff. People, fudge it all up. So it does make it harder to, set rules, because you have to, a lot of times the rules are set in favor of, we don't want people to take science to the extreme. We don't want them to abuse it, so no one gets to do it.
Yeah, and I tell you what, when people are minors, I feel differently. Once they hit that age of consent,
let them do all the stupid fucking crap they want.
I kind of agree with that. You know, but in this particular case, I think that the parents, they had to make a decision to, I mean, and yeah. Do you think that the daughter's quality of life is better when she's smaller?
Looking at that article,
it sounds like it is. Yeah.
It does. The article pushes us towards that, in that direction, I think. And they proposed some other scenarios, which I thought were more egregious.
Yeah. And that's what's going to happen. You know, people are going to look at something like that and say, well, what if this, what if that's like, well, what if? That doesn't really matter as much as, you know, this is what the actual situation was.
Right. And so in a case-by-case basis, I think in this case I would allow this.
Right.
I'm not so sure that I would allow the same kind of thing in the case of the ballerina.
Yeah, that's because...
You know, it's an interesting question, because the case of the ballerina is completely up in the air, and I guess... the only way to judge whether that would be warranted is to look into the future and see whether the girl would be happier in the future. And there's a possibility that the ballerina career is not going to work out, and she's not going to be happy with her body in the future because of that. But there's a possibility that she will become a great ballerina, and she'll be like, yeah, this was absolutely the right decision. I wouldn't be where I am today if it weren't for that surgery. So, but you never know which way it's going to go.
You're going to have more of a discussion in that case.
I disagree with you on one point, though, Parrot. I think in the case of the ballerina, it's up in the air, but only for a few seconds at a time, usually during a jump or a lift.
Longer if they can do a triple axel.
That's true. But I think you're thinking skating.
Oh, that's true. There's no triple axel in ballet, is there?
I don't think so.
Well, thank you for sharing your knowledge of figure
skating. No problem.
Figure skating is essentially ballet on ice, right?
Exactly, right? Thank you.
Yes, we are the cultured people.
You have been lawyered.
Yes, watch a movie called Blades of Glory and see if you still agree with that.
I might be going too
far. All right, so Ian, I have to ask you, this has been bugging me all night. What the hell is a scoliosexual? I think it's somebody who's either attracted to those evil creatures in the Dark Crystal, but I may have the name of those wrong, or somebody who has scoliosis.
Okay, we're jumping topics. Okay, well.
We are.
This was an interesting article I ran across. Actually, I don't think... Oh, damn.
Okay, mine's still on.
I don't think the article actually addresses exactly what scoliosexual is, but it gets into sexuality on so many different levels. I really thought it was just brilliantly done, because it talks about how sexuality is not about sex necessarily. You can have sexuality that's just about attraction without wanting sexual, without having sexual feelings for each other, and at all sorts of different levels of that. This is a brilliant article.
Okay, but talk about Miley Cyrus, because that's where the article starts, and her identification as a pansexual.
Pansexual, yes. And suddenly I'm praying about pansexual. I had a long weekend at Mile High Con, didn't get much sleep, so if my mind seems a bit behind everything, I apologize.
Pansexual is either somebody who has sex with goats or in the kitchen.
No. All right, so according to the article, pansexual refers to those who feel they are sexually, emotionally, spiritually capable of falling in love with all genders.
Okay, so what's the difference? Okay, so what's the difference between that and bisexual?
I don't
limited to male and female.
Bisexual seems to only cover male and female genders, whereas pansexual, there are more genders than male and female.
Okay. So now we're talking intersex. Are we talking about intersex? We're talking about the different chromosome configurations?
I think we're talking about gender identification.
Yeah.
Here's
self-identification. Like,
I'm guessing
some people don't identify as male or female.
Okay.
Yeah, pansexual is that they're human, and that's all.
Okay. So it goes through a whole bunch of different ones, and I don't know that it's important to hit all of these, because it, much like autism, it sounds like sexuality is a spectrum disorder.
Right. But like panorama.
Oh, hold on. What the hell? It's not a disorder. What the hell?
Is? We'll go into some of them. Like panoramic is a good example.
I would have been very disappointed if you hadn't caught that, Mac.
Basically, a person who is panoramically. Now I'm reading so funny. A person who's romantically but not sexually attracted to others, regardless of sex or gender. So they want to have relationships with both male and female, but have no desire for sex with anyone. Here's heterosexual. I am very much awake on my own article.
See, but they go through demiromantic, litromantic, pansexual, polysexual,
zucchini,
panromantic,
sasquisexual.
Yeah. I mean,
if you're in love with Sasquatch.
But I mean, ultimately, it's interesting because we're starting to try to identify all of these different configurations for sexuality, whether you're actually interested in sex, whether it's just romantic, whether it's just a deeper connection.
I mean, people are so complicated.
Well, but I think that's
insanely complicated that to try and fit them into straight and gay doesn't work.
I agree. I completely agree. But the problem is that it really is a spectrum. And I would say that even what we've got here, if you want to label everything, doesn't even come close to labeling everything. And I get to a point where it's like, do we need to label everything? I know that as Americans, as humans, we want to label.
Yeah.
But it isn't necessary. I mean, if we can sit back and we can accept that everybody has a different way of expressing their sexuality, and if we could be okay with that, it wouldn't be necessary to identify like this.
Well, I mean, labels have a purpose.
I agree. Okay, go ahead.
I mean, like, determining that somebody, that a woman is heterosexual, means that, you might have a shot with her, if she's not heterosexual. Then you can, safely write her off as a romantic interest.
But don't you think that reading a lot of these, that at some point, at different moments in your life, you could identify in different categories? There's probably a time when we might identify as asexual. We're not interested. I'm just not interested in sex. So maybe at that moment you're asexual. But at another moment, you're heterosexual.
I can't think of a time where I could, but there might have been.
I don't know. I just think that.
No, I agree.
I understand the necessity of the labels, but I also think that when we start
sexuality can be a little fluid.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. That's the point I want to make.
You know, actually, there's a friend of mine used to live here in the state, and he basically believed there were only two identified sexualities. Vegetarian and peanut butter.
Well, what would be a bisexual in that scenario?
I didn't say it worked for all situations.
What if you like dick? What if you like sausage and taco?
All right.
Imagine right at the fairgrounds, right?
I find the nuances in each one of these interesting, right? I find it at some point. I think it's hard to identify where the dividing line between some of these are.
Yeah,
omnicopulator.
That's part of sexuality, I don't consider myself gay, but I can see why Captain Jack Harkness from Doctor Who would attract men.
Sure.
I look at him. I look at his personality. I look at the way they present that character. I'm like, I could see him being attracted.
Right, but I think
I think I like him better on Arrow.
there is a piece of this that is about people being comfortable enough with themselves to recognize that other people's choices are valid.
Right, yeah.
And that is a big part of sexuality, I think.
Absolutely.
I think most of the people that have issues with homosexuals are the ones who aren't comfortable with themselves.
I agree. I think that that is a huge part of it.
And so, you know, looking at the fact that, you know, there's a huge variety out there and accepting that, so, you know, helps you feel more comfortable in, you know, accepting. I definitely know people who identify as asexual, bisexuals. You know, I myself have met a large amount of them. And while most of these terms I've never heard before, I can guarantee you I know people that fit into those.
And there's spectrum. There are people in the spectrum that are not even remotely listed on here. They only talk on this thing about people who are attracted to humans, other humans.
True.
There are people out there who are attracted to objects in a sexual way. There are people who are attracted to animals, fictional characters.
Yeah, I agree.
We did that thing before about the huge erotic literature market for, like, fictional beasts and dinosaurs.
Yep.
On the bottom of this, there it says 28 bisexual celebrities, and the first one is Megan Fox, and she makes a statement in here. I think people are born bisexual, and then they make subconscious choices based on pressures of society.
Megan Fox isn't the most brilliant of minds, though.
Okay, but here's the thing. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I think that she's right in some respects. If we weren't pressured to make those decisions, either gay or straight,
yeah,
we might see more fluidity. And I think that we're seeing more fluidity as people become more accepting of these. I think that, you know, when you fundamentalists, one of their big arguments is that if we let people do this, nobody's going to procreate. And that's not true. People want to have sex. Men and women want to have sex. And no matter how many different gender or sexual, identifications you can make, the one thing that will be constant is men and women will fuck and have kids.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, like doing that for some reason.
And if we allow women to control their fertility so that they can have sex and have child when they want to, we'll all be better off. And the other part of this that is so clear about this is that sex and sexuality in humans is not about procreation.
Right. Oh yeah.
That is a very small piece of it. We have sex as a social thing. I don't, every time I have sex with my wife, I don't want her to get pregnant. In fact, most of the time I don't. In fact, I never want her to get pregnant again. You know? So, yeah.
But do you avoid looking at her face during sex?
I always, well, particularly when she's not interested, I try to avoid looking at her face. And I turn the light off so that if she is making a face, I won't be tempted. I think the article.
Elton John on this list.
I think the article is a touch superficial. I think they could have done more here.
He said that he's loved men or women, but the person he's with right now and that he loves is a man.
Okay.
That's the last thing I heard.
Okay. I thought he was straight out gay. I didn't know. Bye.
But maybe Megan Fox is closer to the truth than we want.
Being born bisexual, but the society influences, I'll agree with. That does.
I don't know how people are born. I think that there are cases when people are born either way are bisexual, and I think there are cases where people are flexible enough that they might get pushed in a direction that they might normally have gone if they felt they were free to make other choices.
And it may just simply be that the right person at the right time is going to turn the right switch in you.
I totally agree with that.
Jack Harkness concept.
Right, yep. But it also, I mean, and like I was saying, that at different moments, at different stages, at different times of your life, you might identify in different categories for whatever reason.
You know, he is on Arrow now.
Don't watch Arrow. But in Torchwood, what they did have a great line because him and Owen were becoming lovers, and Owen's sister found out and was like, oh, I didn't know you swung that way. He's like, I don't. It's just him.
Sure. I think that that's valid too.
Yeah.
There could be people that we just find attractive for whatever reason. But I think that so often we want to.
I think Brian's hitting on us.
I could be. I could be.
And I think that.
That's not true. I'm only hitting on dumbass. You guys, I know too well.
Oh, my. Oh, Brian.
Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh.
All right. So have we beaten
is it hot in here? Oh. My.
I think that we have beaten this far beyond what the article deserved.
Which is, oh, I disagree with that. It's a good article.
Okay.
But I think we've spent enough time on it.
I like this one. This next one, Ghost Dad.
Oh yeah, this one was fascinating. And I got to thank Sam for this one, my roommate. I'm moving to Washington. This.
A Washington State man failed.
Basically, the upshot here is that.
Uh oh! I hit something. Hold on. Make eye contact. Sorry about that.
All right.
Start over.
The upshot is that this man and his wife have been undergoing fertility treatments, and they got pregnant, and the baby didn't match either of their blood types, and a paternity test revealed that he was not the father. So, you know, they're getting livid, and it's discovered that the father is actually the twin that he absorbed in the womb. So he's got extra genes that he absorbed from his, I would guess, paternal twin.
They said this happens 1 in 8 times that that a pregnancy starts out as twins, in this case not fraternal, but what's the other one? There's fraternal twins in there. Oh no, there would be fraternal twins, not identical twins.
Yep.
And so and this happened in some of these cases, the other fetus absorbs cells from the other one.
Yep. But what is fascinating here is that the genetically, he is the child's uncle, and the father is his non-existent twin.
Isn't that crazy?
It's fascinating.
Yeah,
it's absolutely amazing. I'm reading this going, no way.
Yeah, that was pretty fascinating that could happen. Instead of the fertility clinic being wrong, they made history instead.
Yeah, and it's, you know, genetics. You mm-hmm. know, it does change some of the ways we see genetics, and you know, it makes you wonder what is actually in your own body.
Yep. All right. So let's finish up.
In my case.
Yep. Let's finish up. Is The Martian a true story?
It's an awesome story.
It is an awesome. Great. Have you guys read the book?
No, I haven't. Although I have heard the movie is better than the book in this case.
I don't think so. I've heard the opposite, but I don't know. I read the book. The book is really awesome. I will go see the movie, and I will definitively tell you.
I liked it. A lot of the critics didn't really like it, but I thought the effects were great.
What critics didn't like it?
We're not M. John Carter. Different Martian. Different Martian.
Oh my God.
Actually, this time it's only one Martian out of. Martian.
Actually, the meme that I saw about this was, you know, between Saving Private Ryan and and the Bourne Identity and something else, we've spent a lot of money trying to get Matt Damon back.
That is true.
But okay, for those who don't know, interestingly enough, The Martian started off as you wouldn't name it fan fiction because it wasn't based on any specific.
It started the same way that Twilight did.
Yeah, basically, somebody was just amusing himself by writing a story and said, "Hey, you know what? I'll put this online and see what people think, and have them help me edit and make it make more sense." Then someone said, "You know what? Could you make it available on a reader for me so that I can download it and read it?" I said, "Oh, sure, why not? I'll put it up on Amazon that way for you." And next thing you know, it's selling.
Yeah,
and then he gets it published and. And now made a major blockbuster movie out of it.
It's better than Twilight, and it's also better than 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, easily. I mean, if you guys have not seen the movie, go out and see it. It is a remarkably well-done movie.
So I've read the book. I haven't seen the movie. I've done the opposite of you two.
But basically, showing just how, you know, humanity can really not think things through, there are people who got confused and actually think it was based off a true story. Now, nowhere in the movie does it say that, imply that, or suggest that in any way, shape, or form, but people are asking, you know, did that really happen? Is it based on a true story? And you hope some of these are tongue-in-cheek stuff just messing with you, but you get the feeling you know, there are people out there who are that far gone, not paying attention to the world around them.
Well, some people might also think John Carter of Mars is a true story. So
true.
So what did you guys think of the science in the movie?
It made sense. And he did, you know, that was one thing in his editing critiques is to have people say, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't work. And he, you know, supposedly did a fair amount of research and listened to what people were actually telling him, you know, about it. So there is a fair amount of logic based on how he...
The science is excellent in this movie, yeah. And there's a couple of glaring errors that did.
The biggest one is apparently the atmosphere on Mars would not actually sustain a storm of that level.
Right. I guess we should say that this is spoiler alert, right? We're going to spoil something.
It's the first thing in the movie.
Right, okay, well.
I don't consider that a spoiler. So the movie doesn't happen without the storm. So it's like, yeah, the storm could not happen on Mars, but you know what? Screw that. We'll accept that because the rest of the movie is so awesome it's worth it.
Right.
Yeah. And that's generally what even the scientists are saying. It's like, yeah, you know, ignore that because you know, everything else is so well done. We love it.
The other thing is the potatoes.
Okay, going about the potatoes.
Okay, because the potatoes would have been sterilized before they left the planet, so they wouldn't have been able. He wouldn't have been able to grow them. I also think that there's some issues with the end when he's going from capsule to capsule. He blows himself out of the capsule. That he might not have been I guess that's a minor one. The other one that nobody has brought up, but I question, I don't know if it's in the movie. In the book, he goes out and he recovers, an old space probe that had been on Mars for so many years. And I wonder if the radiation would have destroyed the electronics. I think the radiation effects are not used as much as they could have been.
That's in the movie.
Okay, so I wonder about the electronics, if the radiation would have destroyed them or not. I think that that's questionable.
Well, clearly you're going to have to do an experiment.
Yeah.
But this is based on true events.
Excuse me?
There are humans who dwell on Earth, and they are thinking of going to Mars.
Oh, well, there's that, right?
But so it's based on true events.
So the second article I put in here actually goes into... kind of talking about how, well, if we really did go to Mars, how would we do it? And they're saying, while science in the Martian was good, that's probably not going to be how it goes down. Of course, you know, there's no way to know yet because we aren't there.
One of the things that happens in the movie is that it's one disaster after another. Oh, I'm sorry, the book. I guess the movie is not quite as bad, but the book is like, okay, I don't know where it cut off, but.
in the book.
Yeah, okay, so in the book, it is one disaster after another. Every time things start to go well, he's got through one hurdle, something bad happens. And so what the guy did is he kind of looked at every disaster scenario that could happen on Mars, and he made sure it happened to this character.
I don't think it was, there was quite a few disasters. I don't think it was quite that bad in the
Yeah, that was one thing about the book is that it's just one right after another. But you had said that you thought that people were saying the movie was better, and I hadn't actually heard that.
Howard, and one of the things he liked was there's a scene in the movie where the other members of the expedition actually get to see them interact with their families and stuff via the screen, which was not in the book, but it works so well in the movie because it shows, you know, the connection to Earth. And it'd be harder to have done that in the book.
Which scene is this?
Perfect for the movie.
Which scene?
It added what?
Which scene?
Okay, it's after they decide that they're going to go back to Mars and spend a couple more years in space.
Okay.
And basically it's a scene where each one of them contacts their family. And you see them talking to their family and kind of saying, okay, you know, I still love you, but we have to do this. And it really humanizes them, it really connects them so well. And, you know, they're giving up their chance to spend time with their family in order to save him. And it was such a brilliantly done scene.
All right. Well, you read the book, and I'll go see the movie, and then we'll talk again.
Sounds good.
Because I'm doing this opposite. I've read the book, and then I'm going to go see the movie. You're going to see the movie and then read the book. The book is fantastic. If the movie is even half as good, it'll be a great movie.
Everything, the people who have read the book that I know have loved the movie.
Yeah, so this is one of those cases where the movie doesn't ruin the book.
Right. that they both have the, that's what I understand. They both have their time. They go slightly different, but it makes sense why they do that, and it, you know, works for both of them. You know, they don't take away from each other. They don't lose what was needed.
Excellent. All right. Well, is there anything else?
I got nothing.
All right. Say goodnight, you Wesley Wabbits.
Good night, you Wesley Wabbits.
Where? The rabbits?
Nope, but there is another one in the
Good night.
Well, if you've made it this far, that's an hour of your time you're never getting back. But the Amateur Skeptics appreciate you giving that hour to us. If you'd like to tell us how you felt about spending that hour with us, let us know at WTF@amateurskeptics.com. You could always roast us in a voicemail at 720-295-7785. The Amateur Skeptics podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Share Alike No Derivatives 3.5 license. So hand it to an unsuspecting friend, but please just don't change the content. Intro music by Peter Cannold. Find more of Peter's music at soundcloud.com/PKANOL. Exit music by OFM. Find more of their music at myspace.com/OFMHQ. Artwork for the Amateur Skeptics by Sean Smith Ford. Copyright Shadow Knight Digital Portraiture.